It is that time again. We are back with the Teep This podcast, and this is episode number 6, entitled USA Against the World. This is a very, very special episode that's packed with specific insight and experience that only these particular individuals whom I caught up with this month could share. My guests in this month's episode include Asa Tenpao and Janet Todd, two Muay Thai powerhouses. Asa Tenpao is a professional fighter who I first saw on Lion Fight 28, who simply put on a show-stopping performance. I think it might have been his professional debut, but both Miletic and Chiavello were just constantly blown away with the level of expertise and the unique technique coming out of Asa Tenpao. His martial arts are complete, devastating, and constant. My second guest is none other than Miss Janet Todd. She's an amateur Muay Thai fighter who's been wiping canvases clean from coast to coast and beyond. We'll get into all of Janet's recent accomplishments, including her custom green WBC belt that she just won at the Defiant tournament this past weekend up in Tacoma, Washington. And we'll dive deep into both of their thoughts and opinions on the state of the sport here in the U.S. But what's really stand out about these two fighters is that they've both been in international Muay Thai competitions representing the United States. Our Muay Thai Team USA just got back home from the IFMA 2017 World Championships in Belarus, Minsk. And that competition, the team, the rules, our team support, or lack thereof, and all of that is on the tips of everyone's tongue right now. The United States Muay Thai Federation, or the USMF, has been busting their asses for a number of years now, managing our international team and pushing the sport here in the States. But right now is a pivotal time, and the winds of change are blowing, and it's all really, really good stuff. It's a great time to be involved in Muay Thai in America. So sit back and get ready to take a trip outside of our borders and learn what it is that's been happening on the world Muay Thai stage, find out just how we're doing on that stage, and why it's so important for us to make our mark at the World Championships and elsewhere. But before we get off into our discussions with Asa Tenpao and Janet Todd, let me bring you up to speed on the happenings in and around my local Muay Thai scene here on the left coast. So number one, I know in last month's podcast, I talked about the fact that I was fighting May 6th in my very first fight. That fight did happen. I competed in the IKF PKB 9 event that took place at Intensity MMA down in San Diego, California. It was a wonderful experience for me. I did grab myself a W at that event. I won by TKO in the third round against a very, very game opponent. My technique did go out the window, which I feared. But luckily, my coach and Keita Maget, you guys may know her as Keita Wow, but between her and my coach, Kurod McIver, they gave me the right advice, helped shake the nerves off. I calmed down and relaxed a bit. Hopefully, there will be more stories of more fights for me moving on into the future. My wife isn't too happy with me and this whole Muay Thai thing, but we'll see if I can get her to come over onto our side of that topic. I will post some photos from that fight and information about that particular promotion in its own separate blog post at teepthis.com, so stand by for that. In the fight world, WCK Cali 20 and 21 went down, and both fight cards have delivered unforgettable fights. One fight for me in particular that has remained burned in my mind was Jermaine Soto and Diego Llamas from Cali 21 on April 29th. I had never actually seen Diego Llamas fight in the flesh before, and let me tell you, it is a completely different thing watching him fight live versus seeing him on TV. Not to take anything at all away from the high-flying, back-spinning, heel-kicking Jermaine Soto, but damn, I mean, Diego Llamas is an illusion and a deceiving one at that until you're standing right there in front of him. I'll leave some links to some photos that I shot at that fight in the blog post and a short video clip as well. But man, something extraterrestrial is going on out in Dublin, California at that place I like to call the Killer Factory, Kieran Fitzgibbons Combat Sports Academy, or CSA. I'm going to have to take a road trip one of these days to go train there and just be in that building and try and soak up some of that madness that they're handing out around there. I'm sure I'm probably just going to find nothing but a whole bunch of hard work, but it'll still be wonderful to train in the company of the best of the best. I'm sure I'm not alone in being a fan of CSA and the stable of fighters that we all love to watch compete coming out of that joint. So mad respect to all the fighters coming out of CSA. Looking ahead, though, yes, there is still more. Saturday, July 1st, WCK is back again with Bad Intentions, Cali 22 at the Burbank Marriott. And this bout features a much anticipated rematch between two brothers, both near to my very own heart, Team Victory's own Caleb Cisneros and Evan Bolton from UFC Gym out in Long Beach. These two really got it on at Cali 20 last month. Bolton did keep his belt, but the fight was scrappy. Cisneros tossed Bolton over the top rope. Bolton voiced his unapproval and the crowd went kind of crazy. These two have very different body types, very different styles, and the mixture was definitely something special to watch. I know they're both training their asses off right now, so jump on Instagram or Facebook and follow these fighters. I'll leave some links in the blog post so that you can do that easily. So you can see their story play out and jump on over to WCKMuayThai.com and grab your tickets for Cali 22 before there just ain't no mo left. Also, last month, we got together with Daniel Gutierrez from Defiant Muay Thai Promotions, and he took us by the hand through his entire three-day multi-ring WBC custom green belt tournament that took place on Memorial Day weekend up in Tacoma, Washington. We'll learn more about that tourney when we speak with Janet Todd, but yes, the Defiant team is right back right away with another fight card that's looking for ready fighters. So August 18th, mark your calendars. For that event, it will be taking place right here in the LA area. There you have it for now. If you're not training Muay Thai yet, or you put it down a while ago and your life sucks without it, quit shucking and jiving and get your butt to the nearest Muay Thai gym and get to punching and a kicking. You'll learn more about yourself the deeper you go into the sport, and you'll meet the nicest badasses that you're ever going to meet. And plus, you get to wear those really cool looking Muay Thai shorts, which at the end of the day is really half the reason anybody does Muay Thai anyway. With that said, let's get it cracking, folks. Welcome back to the Teep This Podcast, episode number 6, USA Against the World. Let's get into the podcast.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Aza. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Cool. Well, how you doing?
Doing great. Just getting ready to teach some kids today, some other classes.
Mm-hmm. Is that what you normally do? Is that your day job? You teach?
Yeah, it's actually my life. I co-own Florida Kickboxing Academy, and I run majority of the classes here, specifically all the children's classes. Muay Thai related, not jiu-jitsu, but Muay Thai related. Mm-hmm. And I teach some fighters, some up-and-coming fighters that are looking to get on USMF as well.
That's awesome. Do me a favor then, just introduce yourself to my loving audience here, your full name and exactly what it is that you do.
All right. My full name is Asa Ten Pao. I was born in Portland, Oregon. I've lived in Florida for about 20-plus years now. So pretty native here. I've been doing martial arts since I was about 5 years old and kind of gone through a more traditional setting with Kung Fu. I picked up Muay Thai and amateur kickboxing when I was about 13 and just kind of kept with it through my whole life and never took too long away from it. So continuing on that journey and seeing how far it can take me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I kind of figured that the few times I've seen you fight, the only times I've been lucky enough to actually see you fight has been on television on the Lion Fight promotions. But yeah, you're super aerial. You have strikes that come from all types of unexpected angles. And I assumed, I was like, yeah, he seems like he's got like a martial arts background. So how did you bump into Muay Thai?
I was getting older and I was kind of going away from traditional martial arts, and I was started in Sanda, which is Chinese kickboxing. If you're familiar with Kung Lee, he's kind of one of my heroes growing up. So I tried to follow in his steps, and there's not much Sanda or Sanchao going on. So wanted to do more kickboxing, and, I started doing local tournaments, and then I was hearing about some of my local friends that I've grown up with doing Muay Thai. Mm-hmm. Where in Florida, there's hardly any scene for Muay Thai, so it was very difficult to like come by. And I just so happened to be lucky to stumble upon my teacher, Alan. I'm gonna butcher his name, but Bowen mm-hmm. Damachan.
Okay, and is he Thai as well?
Yes, he's Thai. He's from the Rampo Gym in Bangkok, Thailand.
Okay.
And it was in a corner of a strip mall, and the sign said karate. And I walked in, and I saw this Asian guy teaching class, and I kind of got hooked and just stuck with it. And always kept looking for more. So Muay Thai, it wasn't just Muay Thai. I was always looking for boxing and kickboxing and stuff like that. But Muay Thai became a passion of mine.
Yeah, man. Did your coach, have you heard that you have a natural aptitude for Muay Thai and for martial arts?
Yeah, I don't know, like natural aptitude. I mean, I've done it my whole life, so hopefully it comes natural by now.
Yeah, man. I mean, because when I the first fight I saw you, I can't remember which actual line fight it was, but I know it was Turan Hasanov.
Right, that was my debut.
Man, and it was your debut, and Miletic and Chiavello were both, their jaws were just on the ground. Like, what is this? Who comes in a pro debut with that kind of performance? So I guess that's what it is. It's that lifelong background of martial arts that that separated you so during that first performance, yeah?
Yeah, that and many other factors, of course. But, yeah, it was like taking the leash off finally, you know, and I get to do all my weapons. I get to strike to the head more with all my weapons. And that was something I've been like, especially here in Florida, we don't get to do any elbows or full rules Muay Thai. So it's only kickboxing. So I don't get to throw elbows a lot and knees to the head.
Oh man, you were itching.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just itching to let it go finally.
Oh, that's beautiful, man. Well, it was super inspiring for me, to a lot of people. That is something else. And then your second lion fight was with Bryce Lawrence. Talk to me about that one, because I know he's a preacher, and they talked about that. And I mean, man, you really you gave it to Bryce, and it seems like, I'm not really that familiar with his career or anything, but he seemed like he was a pretty strong Muay Thai practitioner. But man, that was a rough one. How was that fight for you?
Yeah, that Bryce is actually a local kid here, and we kind of got grown up on the same circuit.
Okay.
I think he was having his debut at one time, and it was like my, I don't know, 10th or 15th fight, and he was saying he was having his debut on the same card that I was headlining. Mm-hmm. And we never crossed paths as amateur, but we did a few times spar together, and I helped him a little bit on his first pro debut. I think he was fighting Tim Amorian. And we kind of got the call that, you know, these are what we were offered, and there was no hard feelings, and mm-hmm. so we just scrapped it out, and I felt really confident in the fight. Had a good game plan going in, and it just came out, you know, pretty good.
I remember watching your face. I was particularly trying to look at your face toward, I'm not sure, maybe it was the second or third round, but toward the end of the fight, when, you know, you were really punishing Bryce, and it seemed as though you were like, man, how do I win this fight, put it on this guy without really hurting this guy? Was that conflict actually going on inside of you, or am I reading too much into it?
One of the few that I've seen that. Yeah, I don't want to say I held back, because I'll never say I held back against Bryce, but yeah, I didn't want to do some certain things, you know. I didn't want to, you know, not knock him out like cold or anything like that. But he got to a point where I was like, this man ain't going down.
He would not go down. I know.
I was like, all right, you know. But yeah, me and Bryce are cool and no hard feelings.
No,
there.
Totally. No, I saw the respect and the love there, and you immediately went right to him when they finally stopped the fight, and you just put your arms around him like, damn, dude, what the heck is wrong with you? Why don't you just go down there? You know?
Yeah.
No, it was definitely really wonderful to watch both you guys. It's something that I struggle with, you know, trying to find that balance between that switch between being an athlete who's just competing versus, you know, really hurting somebody. But it is what it is. It's a fine balance that we dance in this sport all the time.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
You know, so, and that brings me to another thing. So have you trained at all outside of the U.S.?
Not anything substantial. I've done about a week maybe of training in Thailand, mm-hmm. just at a few different gyms, but mm-hmm. like I said, nothing substantial.
What year was that you went to Thailand for that short stint?
That was the first time I was selected for the IFMA team. The USMF team was 2015 when they went to Thailand for the Royal World Cup.
So you were still an amateur at that point?
Yes, I was still an amateur, yeah.
Man. So, okay. So you're just straight up American. I mean, with that name, Asa Tenpao, it's such a unique name. I assume that you were from, you know, that you were from another country. I didn't know that you were born and bred right here in the States.
Yeah. My father's from British Guyana. My mother's from Portland, Oregon. And, the last name comes from Guyana. The first cool. name is kind of like interesting meaning behind it.
Yeah, it's cool. No, it's I've been calling you Asa Tenpao for a while, and that segues me right into, you know, really the meat of what I want to really get into with you is, and that's IFMA and the USMF. So, you know, tell our listeners what IFMA, what that means and what that is.
Well, IFMA, if I don't mess this up, is the International Federation of Muay Thai Amateurs, and it's probably the largest professional amateur tournament there is. And when I say pro-am, that means it's strictly amateur rules, but they allow professionals to compete in it in the A class. Mm-hmm. IFMA is kind of, I don't want to say it's completely different from what we understand here, but it's a little different from the way we fight Muay Thai and score Muay Thai a little bit. Mm-hmm. Some of the deeper heads into Muay Thai understand that. So it's a really prestigious tournament that a lot of high level caliber fighters compete in and make their journey in. And it's definitely the tournament to go through, especially as an amateur, mm-hmm. to get you, you know, to your, that real pro status, that international professional status.
It's been pitched to me, IFMA is the Olympics of Muay Thai. It's the top tournament on the planet Earth. All of the best from every nation on this planet, the one place that they'll finally compete is IFMA. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's like a little gray area, but yeah, it's, for Americans, you know, we kind of have to pay our way. So that kind of negates a lot of people in some other countries the same way. Some other countries back their fighters and they're able to bring out those top athletes to fight. Mm-hmm. While some of the other countries, maybe the top can't do it, maybe financially, man, because we don't have any backing per se. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot harder for us to maybe make that, maybe bring out the entire best. So I would say definitely it is the best fighters from the countries to go out. Mm-hmm. But, you know, with financial backing on a lot of countries, I think you can see even more talent mm-hmm. that hasn't come out.
Now, you know, and the USMF, which is the United States Muay Thai Federation. So what's their whole role in bringing the best that we have from the States to the world stage?
Yeah, their thing now is they're starting with the amateur tournaments and building up a ranking system through that to kind of, you know, see what crop of fighters we have that are making a name for themselves and can be a part of this team.
Yeah.
So they're doing a lot of things with tournaments, like the TBA this year is a qualifier. Then you have USMTO, which will be a qualifier where you'll accumulate points and ranking, which is a great thing mm-hmm. To push the agenda for Muay Thai in America, I believe, and to kind of get that going. You know, I think that's always something that's lacked here. And Yeah. Now it's getting moving, and it's actually very exciting.
No, it really, really is. Tell me, in your opinion, what do you think IFMA, winning IFMA, how can that impact Muay Thai here in the States? How can that help us?
Well, it definitely has to have some marketing behind it, a little bit more marketing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, winning that is a big deal, because we are kind of last in Muay Thai when it comes into international play.
Sure.
And so it's kind of like we're always going to be the underdog. So to bring that back here is really something to say for Americans. And, you know, it'll inspire not only the generation, but the next generation to get into that, to have that outlet.
Yeah, no, for sure. The IFMA World Muay Thai Championships, they happen once a year?
I believe so.
And this year, they just took place. We went over to Belarus, Minsk, and we competed under Coach Jason Farrell, if I'm not mistaken.
We had we had four coaches out there. We had Danny Brandt from Power MMA, mm-hmm. Brian Popejoy from Boxing Works, mm-hmm. Charlie Catone from Eight Limbs, Jason Farrell from Level Up, and President Michael Corley from Houston Muay Thai. Mm. I don't believe I'm missing anybody. But yeah, all those guys came out there with their knowledge, and, mm-hmm. and they put together great plans for everybody.
Now, all those coaches and all those fighters, you know, yourself, David Huerta, Janet Todd, you know, the list goes on. Everyone had to pay their own way to IFMA this year, correct?
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, that's... I mean, we're all into the sport. I mean, that's putting your money where your mouth is. That's a beautiful thing, I'm sure. How was it? What was it like, man? You know, being on Team USA, being over there with all those folks. Talk about it a little bit. Just how it felt, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah, the experience itself is always amazing, whether you're fighting or not. But to actually experience, to be a part of a team where people are all over the country that you may only see as a potential opponent, now you're all a community kind of thing, and it's, you share ideas and you share insights on what goes on in your community and around the area. And to be a part of the tournament, to see the teams, the other way the countries run their things and the passion behind it, mm-hmm. It's something that I think a lot of fighters should all aspire to be a part of, because it's a moment that, you know, you don't get so often in regular tournaments or local events and stuff like that.
How did you feel with the talk to us about the way the point system, the way, because here in the States, folks, when we see a fight, you know, maybe our commentator might have their own, you know, hypothetical scorecard, but the scores are kept secret until the end of the fight. But it's different at IFMA's, correct?
Correct. It's open scoring.
How did that feel? Did that change the game at all for you?
It changes mildly, yes. But it just makes it so you gotta fight every round, and makes it for an exciting event as well.
How were the tournaments? What's the word I'm looking for? How were they attended this year?
It was pretty packed in there, and I think the Belarusian army was coming in there a lot. So anytime that Belarus or Russia fought, it was madhouse in there. It was loud. It was electric. So it was a crazy environment. And yeah, it was great to be a part of that.
Now, you, with your with the background that you have in martial arts and the way we've seen you fight, how was the competition for you?
Well, the competition is steep. It's like I said, it's the best around the world. And, you know, just being a part of that, being in the same ring with that caliber of opponent is what I always want to be, you know, in front of. I want to be in front of an experienced opponent. And, yeah, to be on that stage and to represent, it's exciting.
Mm-hmm. How'd you do, man?
I didn't do too well, actually. I got in there first round and was moving around decent and came in a little bit heavy and went for an attack, and he spun with a spinning elbow and caught me right by the ear, and I just didn't recover in the first round, and that was it for my show.
Damn. Yeah, I've heard that the competition is on a whole nother level. And it's one of the things I really wanted to, you know, chat with you guys about, because like I said, I mean, you're one of the best I've ever seen, and I'm not the only person that says that. So I was really curious. Now, and you're in the A class, correct?
Yes.
So what is the combination of pads that you wear or don't wear in the A class competition?
In the A class, you just don't wear the body protector, the body vest. Okay. So you wear the gloves, the headgear, the elbow pad, and shin guards, which are, everything's really thin. It's like you're putting on a sock, so it doesn't make a difference at all.
Yeah. So how did you feel being a professional fighter? You fought on television. You've fought bone on bone. How did you feel? Did wearing the pads affect you in any way mentally? You know, was there any perception that you had prior to actually competing in the pads? Did you feel, I don't want to go back to that? Or how did you feel about that? Or was it a non-issue?
I mean, yeah, you're putting back on pads and stuff. So, you know, your head is a little bit bigger and you got shin guards, so maybe they can pick that up in their peripheral, stuff like that. But that shouldn't affect the way you fight. I'm sure I could see why some people don't like to do it, but it's a fight, and it shouldn't matter, because there's places that you fight professionally with pads on anyways. Mm-hmm. Internationally, I think France, for one, you have to wear elbow pads even if you're a professional. So I've seen Sanchai be in there with elbow pads on. So if the headgear is the concern, then I don't know. That shouldn't be that big of an issue.
Yeah, because it sounds like with the padding or not, the competition that you faced was still as stiff as it would have been, you know?
No, no doubt.
Let me ask you another question. Do you think, I mean, how are we doing here in the States? How are we doing here in the States with Muay Thai? Do you like where Muay Thai is going here in this country right now?
Actually, yes, I do. There's finally a direction. There's finally an initiative that's being pushed, and you can actually see it. I mean, there's ways of creating athletes in this sport now, and that's what we've always needed. And, you know, you need that kind of thing, like what they're doing with the tournaments, with rankings, and mm-hmm. So we can kind of figure out who's the who and, you know, what's going on in our community, rather than everybody saying that they're the best or something. We're going to have a proven way, a set route. So with that, and with the kids, you know, the youth development, you know, that gives a lot of kids a direction that they may not have had, especially aspiring to be in the Olympics. So
I think what you're doing, with the Youth Development League is probably, it could be the most important stuff. I mean, we're going overseas and we're competing with countries who are sending fighters to compete with us, and those fighters have 50, 60, 70, 90 fights. Our fighters have 10, 15, 21, 6, you know. But moving forward into the future, you know, 10, 12, 15 years from now, maybe even less, because of what you guys are doing specifically with the Youth Development League through the United States Muay Thai Federation, and the other gyms around the country that, you know, are instituting Muay Thai for children, that's going to change. We're going to have Muay Thai fighters who've got 75 fights and they're 21 years old versus 22 years old and they have 5 fights. Right. I think that's super, super important. Talk to me about your specific involvement with the Youth Development League, what you're doing and what you're finding there as you work with that organization.
Well, first, my specific enrollment, I don't have any role. I just work with USMF just because I'm an athlete. I've been teaching children since I was 20. I'm 27 now, so it's something I've always done. And now, being that I've been able to go to IFMA and stuff, I wanted to bring that back with me and to teach that to the kids. And with the direction of Muay Thai being in the Olympics, it's something I wanted to hit on really quickly, especially here in Florida. We don't have that community like that. And, you know, I just wanted to open that up and give more of a direction for a lot of kids that, you know, have Olympic dreams, but maybe it's not soccer or something. Maybe it'll be Muay Thai. So,
yeah. So Muay Thai is headed to the Olympics.
Correct.
What do you know about that? How are we doing? What's the target? I'm really excited about this whole Olympic thing, so I'm just really curious to hear someone else's take on it too.
Yeah, the main concerns for everybody is, will it be watered down somehow? I don't know how that will happen, but that I know that's one of the main concerns. But there's not much on it. But what I've heard is it'll be like 2024 when it gets in there, and the interesting thing will be the pros and amateurs, how they're going to deal with that. You know, with some countries bringing in some, you know, 300 fights, and we're bringing in 10 fights. You know, how are we going to change that?
Yeah.
How is it going to happen? For U.S., I think it will be great. I think, you know, that'll get more attention, maybe some more sports attention. So we'll see. We'll see probably financial backing, better backing behind the athletes.
We're going to have to show these folks really how cool Muay Thai is. I don't know. This country seems to need, it's like we need some sort of sensationalism, or we need like a celebrity to do it. We always need some sort of spectacle. I think that the spectacle the UFC has built around mixed martial arts, I think it's fundamental in its success in this country.
I think so too. If you look at shows like The Contender Asia,
yep,
and even The Contender here, boxing, you know, those are shows that people watch. And when I watched The Contender Asia, it gave me insight on a lot of fighters and, you know, a lot of big names that came out. And
yeah, for sure. We need to find a couple stars, create a couple stars, and then we need to get behind them and not only push them, you know, on the global stage as they compete, but also push them here at home on our own stage to let folks know, you know, this is what an American Nakamui looks like. This is, and it's going to be a man and it's going to be a female. You know, the women in Muay Thai is not sexist or racist or biased in any way. You know, these strikes and this technique is what it is. It loves and hates all very, very evenly. So the women in Muay Thai, from at least my, you know, short time in the sport, they do not mess around. They are just powerhouses, which we've seen, you know, across the aisle in the MMA world as well.
Yep. Women have definitely a tenacity and a good fighter insight on their thing, because a lot of them cross from what I've seen, a lot of them cross from gymnastics and other forms of sports like that, where you have to perform on a big stage and requires you to be an athlete as well.
Is there a way for us to introduce, like, let me ask you this, let me think about this, like, when you're young and you're looking for a sport to get into, how does a kid find boxing and kickboxing? What are you doing in your gym to let people know, hey, this is a great sport, let your children come try it out? Is there anything to do?
Yeah, there's always marketing. There's always marketing to do. What we're doing specifically, we just hired a marketer to get us doing that. But
cool.
I mean, I take a lot of pride in my kids' class, and I have great kids in my group, and the parents are all behind me, and
yeah,
a lot of word of mouth goes into play, but I retain a lot of the kids because I have other older kids that are teenagers that are great role models for them as well, and, you know, they just see the different levels of participation from different ages, you know, it gets them more motivated to stay in it.
Yeah, Asa, man, you sound like a buttoned up, you know, righteous dude, man. I mean, for me, one of the biggest things I love about Muay Thai is just the human values that I see people exhibit toward one another in the sport. It goes back to what, you know, I saw take place between you and Bryce Lawrence in the ring. And yeah, man, it sounds like you got your head screwed on real tight, and it's only a matter of time. And I think it's wonderful, and we can't go wrong. We can't go wrong doing a good thing like Muay Thai. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Any martial arts that doesn't want to take, you know, the wrong ideas and stuff. You know, any martial arts is great for kids to be involved in.
Only a couple more things before I let you go. One thing is, I want you, since you happen to be over there in Belarus, I still want to try to feel being over there just a little bit more. So first off, do you remember kind of overall, how did we do? Did I mean, just how did we do in your own opinion, and who do you remember kind of? I think we got a silver and a couple of bronze medals. But, I mean, how did we perform over there this year? How was it?
Yeah, we performed very well. Everybody did great with their fights. Like Coach Corley said, nobody had an easy fight. Nobody has an easy route.
Yeah.
Everybody had to, you know, scrap it out to get where they were. Emilio, who I helped work for his camp, he did absolutely great over there. Stay composed and focused throughout his time. I thought Janet Todd did absolutely great. She exhibited a lot of, you know, traditional techniques, and you can see she's well founded and well coached by Coach Popejoy.
Yeah.
And Aaron as well. She's very well coached by Jason. They have that fighter wife relationship that seems to be working for them. So it's great to see that kind of involvement in the sport.
You know,
to see couples like that.
Yeah.
It's always an eye opener for a lot of people to go over there. This was my second time, so I kind of knew more to what to expect than others. So seeing others' reactions as well, and, you know, them understanding the game and stuff like that, it's cool.
Is there anything that we can do to make competing in the IFMA Worlds a more attractive notion for professional fight athletes in the States?
I mean, we've had some of the best competitors compete in it. It comes down, I guess, to financials, I believe. But I hope it's really not just financials that are holding a lot back. The opportunity to go in front of the best should always be a knock moist path.
Sure.
But a lot of guys are tied up, and a lot of the good guys are tied up in contracts with professional organizations, and they're doing their thing and they're set up. So it takes, you know, you have to have some time to do this, and you have to take time off and stuff. And it's strictly for the experience. So if you're going there, you know, expecting getting paid or something like that, then, you know, you're going to be upset because it's not going to happen.
Right.
But if you're going there to represent your country and, you know, get in front of the best, then that's where you definitely want to be.
Yeah. It's a pivotal time. We all keep saying here in the States for Muay Thai. I know a lot of people complain about what we could be doing better. We need more money. We need more exposure, you know, but it sounds like the USMF and other organizations are really getting together to do more and to do better and to create new avenues and new routes for fighters to be developed and to emerge. In your opinion, it's got to be cool, though, to be here in the States at this time. So tell me, what are we doing right? What is it about being an American Nak Muay right now that is totally awesome? What do you love about the fact that you are in the American Muay Thai scene as a professional and world-class amateur fighter? What are we doing right?
I believe we have good diversity here. Wealth of knowledge of different coaches. Although it may not be strictly fundamental Muay Thai, there's a lot of guys and girls that are coming up with innovative ways to kind of, you know, get on the Muay Thai scene. Not saying that it should ever take place to what's going on in Thailand, because we're very far behind. But as athletes, I think we're doing great as athletes. We just need to get better at the IQ and the ring exposure and the international level. So I don't think we're too far behind. It's just understanding things. But I think diversity is one of the key things that helped a lot of good fighters, you know, go along their path.
That's super powerful to say that about the United States, because at the end of the day, that diversity, that is this country's greatest asset, is its diversity. That's what makes this country. I totally agree with that. I wouldn't have never connected those two dots, but when you connected them, they were completely logical to me. That makes a lot of sense. You know, just wrapping it up, man, thanks again, you know, Asa, for sharing with me on this, and I'm sure that the listeners are really going to take in a lot of the information that you gave. I will send you another email asking you for some images of your coach that you talked about and some of the other fighters and some links. But on that note, what is coming up next for you in your fight career?
Just looking out for the next best fight. Looking to get back on that horse real quick. There's a couple of good promotions out there that we've talked to, and you know, possibility of getting back online fight is always there. Mm-hmm. Just waiting on that call.
Okay, cool. And so, where can we find you online? Where can we keep up with you so that when you do get that call, we're aware of it too?
My Facebook account, my Instagram account, just Acer10Pal. You can just put that in, and you'll see all my stuff.
Well, there it is for you folks. Acer10Pal, one of the most unique young strikers that I've ever seen on the Lion Fight stage. Thanks so much, A, for talking to me, but B, for everything that you're doing for the sport in this country, and especially with the kids. I think it's incredible.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right, brother. I'll holler back at you soon.
All right. Take care.
You too. Bye. Okay, so that is the conclusion of the first half of the episode. You are listening to the Teep This Podcast, episode number 6, USA Against the World. Acer10Pal was one of only two professional fighters on this year's Team USA to compete at the World Championships. Our very own David King Tong Huerta was the other pro athlete on the team. I'm very much looking forward to attending this year's TBA Classic Muay Thai World Expo, which is the last USMF qualifying tournament before their new national ranking system begins to be implemented. The tournament takes place in Des Moines, Iowa, in the center of the country, so I'm really looking forward to seeing what American Muay Thai looks like in other parts of the U.S. besides the West Coast. You can get the goods on this year's TBA Classic by visiting their website at tbasanctioning.org. That's tbasanctioning.org, or their Facebook page at facebook.com/tbaclassic. So onward into the second half of the episode, where I got down with amateur fighter, female, and phenom Janet Todd from Boxing Works Gym here in Torrance, California. Let's jump back into the podcast. Yo, man, Janet Todd, this is awesome. Thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah, of course. Anything to promote the sport, you know?
Yeah, for real. And that is, truthfully, that is what it's all about. It's a really great time right now. I just got off speaking with Acer10Pal, who you've spent some time with.
Oh, yeah, he's best.
Dude, what a stand-up guy. I mean, he had a super interesting story. I've been a fan of his since, I think, Lion Fight 28, when I first saw him.
Was that his first pro fight?
It was his pro debut.
Yeah, that was a good fight.
Yeah, he was bonkers. You know, him and Gaston Bolaños, those are two of the fighters that like came out and I was like, wow, what is that? You know,
where did you come from?
Yeah, dude. Which brings us right into everything. I mean, I really want to jump right into, I want to get to, you know, your trip to Belarus and what's going on with the USMF and all that. But before we jump into that, please just do me the fave and introduce yourself to the viewers and give us your Muay Thai story. Just tell us who you are, your name, and just take us up from when you first met this sport and just bring us up to today. However long or short-winded you want to be about it, it's no problem.
Okay. I might be shorter than longer.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good.
So I'm Janet Todd. I'm from Hermosa Beach, California, originally. Mm-hmm. Born and raised, and I still live here. When I actually first got introduced to Muay Thai was when I was in college in San Luis Obispo. Oh. In the Central Coast. I actually started at a cardio kickboxing place. Mm-hmm. And then my now husband at the time was my boyfriend.
Cool.
He actually introduced me to a Muay Thai gym up there.
Does he train as well?
He used to. He used to fight too. He used to do kickboxing. Now he does a little bit of jiu-jitsu and just tries to stay in shape. So
not to pull you out of your introduction, but I mean, it's interesting because, you know, my wife does not train. I've been married to my wife for like 9 or 10 years now. We have two kids and we go way back, her and I, like when we were really young, we dated. She's kind of like a high school sweetheart, but
oh wow.
Yeah, she's really, she's really, really cool. She's really great. And she's the real deal. Just like Muay Thai will call me on my, will call me on whatever, because in the ring, it's just like the truth comes out.
Yeah.
That's how she is with me. She'll be like, oh, you're doing really well. Or she'll be like, yeah, you're kind of full of it right now, so you just need to figure that out on your own or whatever. And I really respect her for that. But she doesn't train. I do. How do you, does it play a role between you and your husband, the fact that you both have a relationship with combat sports and this kind of training, or does it even matter in your opinion?
I think it really matters. I mean, he understands the type of commitment that it takes to get to where I am, and he's been nothing but supportive in my journey, and I really, really appreciate that, not having to have another, you know, stress, like worrying about the relationship. Knowing that he's there for me means a lot, and I think it contributes to part of my success.
Yeah, it probably does, maybe because you're laser focused and you're totally free. It's just you and Muay Thai. There's nothing else going on, which I think is what's required, you know, to get that expression, to express that cleanly and that thoroughly in this kind of sport. So yeah, that's kudos to both of you for creating that relationship to allow that to come to the surface. I think it's great.
Yeah, I mean, it's my husband. I mean, he's supporting my dream, so it's I'm very, very fortunate to have him.
Well, on that note, the dream that he's supporting is happening. You are the talk of the town right now. There are two things I want to talk about. I want to talk about your trip to Belarus. I want to talk about IFMA. I know you've done it twice now. This is your second world's competition, correct?
Yeah, it was my second, yeah.
And then after that, we're going to get off into what you just did up in Tacoma, which I didn't even see that coming. And when I saw it, I was like, oh, Janet Todd, this is not a joke. So first things first, tell me about your IFMA journey. I want to know what you saw. I want to know what the level of competition was like. I want to know how it felt, you know, to be with our team, how we did, a whole bunch. So let's see, where do we start? Let's start with...
I don't know. That's
yeah,
so much.
I know. That was so much. Let's start with the world competitions themselves. Tell me about your first trip to the IFMA World Championship Muay Thai competition.
I think I've mentioned this in interviews before, but the very first one, the one I did in Thailand, that was back in 2015. Mm-hmm. I honestly didn't know what to expect, so I just wanted to go in and see what it was about and just fight.
How many fights had you had at that time?
I think it was either like maybe 9.
Any tournament fights, or were those all individual single fights?
I think I just had single fights. I did tournaments after. Actually, I only started doing tournaments last year because I was having a hard time finding fights.
Yeah, that's deep. That's deep. And so then take me to 2016.
2016. Well, I guess I didn't do 2016. I would, you know, because of work and finances, I just wasn't able to do the championships that year. Mm-hmm. But for this year, you know, I kind of knew what to expect because of, you know, the 2015 tournament. Knew the type of competition, knew the type of scoring. Mm-hmm. I think that helped a lot for my preparation for 2017. Mm-hmm. We worked a lot of more IFMA scoring specific type drills, like working on kicking, because kicking and knees score a lot. Mm-hmm. So I needed to make sure that if I blocked a kick, I made sure I checked with, you know, checked or evaded, you mm-hmm. know, blocking with your hands is still a score. So you can't block with your hands. So, understanding the scoring helped a lot for preparation for the 2017 mm-hmm. and just knowing like how chaotic it can get. I just knew like, I can't come in with expectations that things are going to run smoothly. So just having the mentality of, all right, let's just go with the flow. Let's not stress about the stuff that's out of our control.
When you say how chaotic it can get, what is it?
Then things can change. Times, you know, times that fights can start can change, which it did. Hmm. You know, you just can't, things can change and you have to go, you know, roll with the punches.
So how did things go this year? Or was it smoother? Not because things went smoother. It was just smoother because of your approach.
I think it was smoother because of my approach. I came in there with a stronger mentality than I have ever before for any type of competition.
You did really well over there. Do you feel that same way?
Yeah, I'm proud of myself for what I was able to do. I wish I could have done more.
Well, let us know. Let the listening audience know exactly what did you achieve on this particular trip to the IFMA 2017 championships in Belarus. What did you come home with?
I came home with a bronze medal.
Mm-hmm. In what weight class?
51 kilograms.
Okay.
So I fought 3 times in 3 days. Lost my third fight to a girl from Morocco.
Mm. How many fights have you had here in the States?
Okay, so international fights, I think I've had 8 now. And I think I have 28 fights now.
Cool.
So maybe 20.
That's good. No, that's great. I mean, and the opponents that you faced this year, do you know their, like, the fight records? How many fights your first opponent? Do you know how many she had?
No, I didn't do that sort of research. And generally, I don't even watch them before.
I'm totally with you. I just did my first fight. It wasn't, you know, the most, you know, craziest thing in the whole world. But I was the same way. And I think if no matter how long I was fighting, I probably would not do too much research on my opponents. I would be working with my coach and listen to him or her. But for the most part, when you show up, I'll figure all that out in front of you. I don't need to be focused on all that madness. I totally agree with that approach.
Yeah, even for, fights out in the U.S., I made the mistake of, you know, studying an opponent so much that I expected a certain look.
Mm-hmm.
And when that look wasn't there, it just screwed with my head. Yeah. And I wasn't able to perform to my capability at all. And
no, that completely makes sense. So the IFMA competition between, there's the males and the females. The male side has 2 divisions and the female side has only 1 division, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
I've heard people talk before about the IFMA competition and it's been stated, I'm not certain it's true or not, but it's been stated that the female fights may get called, may get stopped quicker than perhaps a male fight. If one of the opponents is not answering back, that the officials will step in quicker to stop that fight in the female divisions versus the male divisions. Did you find that to be the case? Have you heard that or is that just conjecture?
I don't think I've heard that, and I don't know if I can say I saw that. I think it depends on who's reffing. Mm-hmm. I think it's purely based on them. But I did see some fights. I don't think it had to do with whether it was woman or male, but I did see a fight get stopped really early because somebody wasn't responding quick enough. I have seen that, but I think it's dependent on the referee. I don't think it has to do with male or female.
Talk to me about this. Other countries that we face in the international competitions, do you know if those countries are sending professional versus amateur athletes in to compete against us, or do you not know?
I've fought professionals at IFMA before, so I think each country just sends, you know, who they think best represents, you know, the female in that weight category. So
how are you competing here in the States? Are you still in the amateur ranks or have you gone pro or considered going pro? Where are you currently in your fight career?
I'm still amateur at this point, and yes, we're considering going pro. It's just about finding the right moment to do it and making sure that I'm still able to consistently fight. I don't want to be stuck in a situation where I turn pro and I'm, you know, waiting forever to get a fight. The point is to continue to get myself in the ring and keep getting better. And it's hard to do that when, you know, you don't have that opportunity.
Do you think that opportunity exists? I mean, I've heard this before from other female fighters, especially in the Muay Thai world, maybe not so much so in, you know, professional MMA, but definitely in Muay Thai. Do you feel there's enough fights here in the States? Are we just missing them or are people just not connecting the dots or are they not there?
We have very few opportunities out here as professional Muay Thai athletes, at least in the States.
For women, women and men, or more for women?
More so for women, but I think males as well.
Hmm.
I think there's, if you look at other countries like Russia and Australia, there's fights every weekend. We don't have those types of opportunities.
Hmm.
So I think in that aspect, we're a little behind. And I think that's, you know, having that sort of frequency and being able to, you know, execute what you've been practicing in the ring as frequently as some of these countries do kind of will bring our level up, bring our level of competition up within the United States.
Let me ask you this. How did having the live scoring How did that feel for you? Did it affect your performance at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I actually think it's great to have that, because not knowing sometimes makes you think that, oh, maybe I am winning. And then in the end, you might hear something like, oh, well, you just lost, you know, 30-27. And you're thinking, what the hell just happened? But yeah. Knowing what the scores are in between the rounds can make for some really exciting fights, which we definitely saw.
Wow.
You know, when you see that they're, that, you know, people are tied, people go at it, and you get some really exciting fights that way. So I actually enjoy seeing the scores as the rounds go by.
Is there a particular fight that you really remember that really stood out for you? Tell me about that fight. Who were the opponents, or at least what were the competing nations that in that fight that you really remember?
Super Von fought this Swedish guy, really, really tough. He was taller than him. Mm-hmm. But Super Von landed this amazing spinning back elbow. The guy kept clenching. Super Von just kept landing some really like clean kicks mm-hmm. on his body. But man, that Swedish guy was so tough, and he still came back. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously on the scorecard, Super Bond won, but to see the
chin on that Swede.
Yeah, yeah. The chin and just his ability to keep going and his mentality to just stay in the game was pretty cool to watch.
Was it riveting? Like, was the entire audience, just everybody connected and just like out of control, or how was it?
Well, I think for every Super Bond fight, everybody was watching. There was always a huge crowd.
Wow. You know, tell me this. Talk to us about the padding that we wear, you know, because here in the States, folks see the international competition with the headgear and the chest pads and the shin guards. Talk to us about that padding, how thin it is, and how it affected the competition for you.
Having padding doesn't really, at least for me personally, didn't affect me. The padding for the women, at least, we just had to have a headgear. We didn't have to have the chest protectors. Shin guards and elbow pads, and yeah, the elbow pads and shin guards are very thin, so it's like wearing socks, which was really nice. I like them.
So is there any bloodshed at IFMA? Is there any broken bones? Do people actually get hurt? Like, tell me about
it. Yeah. Like I said, the padding's thin, and sometimes the padding moves around during the fight, so sometimes you can get exposed elbows and people get cut mm-hmm. during competition. People get hurt. People get knocked out. Just because you have padding doesn't mean that, you know, there's not any danger involved. There's definitely risk there.
That's interesting, because, I mean, I wonder about, you know, we watch a lot of blood and guts on MMA, and we see bare skin and bone, you know, against bone. And then when we see the headgear and the pads, it somehow, I don't know, diminishes our perception of the level of competition and the level of risk. And I think maybe that's what I'm scratching at when I start to ask those questions. I want people to understand, especially from a fighter in the ring, what you're looking at when you're looking at Muay Thai competition at this level, even with this padding. Talk to us about, you're a very intense fighter. I've seen you train. I'm wondering about the level of competition. I've heard it so much. I've heard people say that, you know, what's going to happen is your favorite fighter that you've been watching here in the States for the last year, just, you know, kick ass and take names, is going to go to IFMA and get cleaned in the first round by some person from some country that you've never heard of. Talk to me about that. Is that the case, or do you not feel that?
I'm not saying that it's exactly the case, but yeah, some high-level fighters that could be, you know, European champions or, you know, considered world champions do lose in this world competition. Mm-hmm. So it is a possibility. Mm-hmm. As for like the intensity, at least my intensity in the ring, mm-hmm. and I didn't think like, oh wow, this is pretty intense. Like, you know, I don't know what to do here. That wasn't sort of my mentality. I knew going in, I'm going to be fighting the best. So I want to rise to the occasion and do what I'm capable of and sort of
meet that challenge.
Yeah. And see, you know, be able to see what I'm made of. And it's just more focus on me rather than what's around me or, you know, who's across from me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. Tell me this. What does it do for you when you win a medal at the IFMA Muay Thai Championships? How does your life change from meddling in these international competitions?
I don't think it changed my life. It makes me want it more. Knowing that I got bronze, I really want that gold, and I want to build my skill set to be able to get that gold for next time. Mm-hmm. So, going back and seeing, okay, what can I do better so that I can perform better than I did last time. So it makes me want to work harder, if that, more than anything.
Have you thought about winning gold? Like, you win the gold, I mean, what's after that? Do you try to do it again? Do you go pro? Do you try to open your own gym? I mean, what could the gold medal do for Janet Todd?
Hey, things change. Like, as time goes on, people adapt. More, newer fighters come up in the ranks. You just keep competing. Gold, just because you win gold doesn't mean it's the end of the road. You keep competing. There's going to be new blood.
Do you have an opinion on what we could do here in the States to help a fighter like yourself have more opportunities to expand her talent, more opportunities to fight here in the country? What would, I know you're looking for them. What are you looking for that you're not finding?
I mean, a lot of these promotion that puts on fights, it's a business. They need a way to make money. Mm-hmm. And a way to make money is selling tickets.
Okay.
And so I feel like a lot of the fight cards are put together for fighters that can sell a lot of tickets, because, as a business, you have to make money. So I understand that aspect. Mm-hmm. I'm just not a great ticket seller. So I think it's more of being able to market myself, or maybe get some, help from you and, mm-hmm. Other people, other sponsors like West Coast Muay Thai and Fight Style, and have them help me promote myself so that I can get more opportunities to fight on these shows. But
yeah,
I wish it wasn't a business like it is. I wish people would just put on good fights to put on good fights. But I mean, I understand it. It is a business, and they need a way to make money so that they can continue to put on shows. So
yeah, no, that's a valid point. And we got to figure out how to get these fighters out there so folks can see it. Are there any promotions here stateside that you target that is a sweet spot for you? Are there promotions that you would like to be fighting for, or not really?
I would like to fight for them all. But I think with me, it's about being able to fight frequently and being able to be matched up with somebody that'll challenge me.
Do you have thoughts on the Lion Fight brand? Do you think that could be a stage for you that could help?
I would love to fight for Lion Fight. I think they put on really amazing shows, and I fought on their amateur undercard twice now, and I enjoyed it both times.
Seems like you're probably on deck then.
Oh, but again, I hope they can also, match me up as frequently as I would like, because mm-hmm. I think that's the problem. It's being able to fight frequently as a professional.
I had a long conversation with a really seasoned boxing coach and aficionado named Dino Spencer. He runs the legendary Fifth Street Gym down in Miami, the gym that was formerly owned by Angelo Dundee, where Muhammad Ali, trained for the duration of his career. And one of the things he talked about was he talked about memorable fights. His take on it was, hell, Charles, these matchmakers, it'd be better for a fighter to have a war that everyone talks about all year long than for a fighter to fight 20 times and all the fights are just good fights, but nothing stand out. What say you to a comment like that?
Oh, I totally agree.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to be known as the show to put on epic fights. I would.
Yeah, there's some epic.
That draw the crowd.
Yeah, you're right. People like Galen Okazaki from West Coast Muay Thai. I know that David Huerta is super hungry. He wants to fight a lot. There's no shortage of talent and the people that want to express it. I think we just got to keep stirring the pot and just kind of just trying to keep aligning our efforts to try to make it happen. And that kind of brings me into the next topic. Somebody that is, you know, putting his money where his mouth is, and that's Daniel Gutierrez of Defiant Promotions. I just spoke to Daniel on the podcast actually last month about the tournament that you just won in your division. So tell me, how'd you even come into doing that? Because it was really cool for me because I just so used to you at IFMA. And then, bam, you popped up with the green belt. I'm like, man, Janet Todd is like not a joke. She just went overseas to Minsk, came back with a bronze, and then she just flew up to Tacoma. Talk to me about that that tourney. When did you decide to get on board with that?
So when I lost to the Moroccan girl in Belarus, mm-hmm. I was pretty heartbroken. And then my coach, Brian, was like, well, there is that WBC tournament in Tacoma in 2 weeks. You want to do that? I was like, yeah, sign me up. Let's see if I can. Can you please see if I can sign up? I was just eager to get back in.
I feel
like that feeling of losing. It's never easy.
Yeah, you want to get rid of that.
And it makes me want to go back in there.
Well, take us from Belarus. How long were you here before you ended up going up to Washington?
I was home for a week and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I got back, I went straight to work and straight to training.
Mm-hmm. Then you shot up to Washington.
Yeah.
So how was it? How was it attended? Was the attendance good? Was there lots of people? Like, how did it feel? You know, this is that has never happened up there before. This is a totally new tournament that Daniel put together in the WBC. I hear they made like a special green belt just for that tourney. I mean, you just came from Belarus, Minsk. How did this thing feel compared to that?
I mean, it's obviously a little different. I mean, you've got a bunch of countries competing in Belarus, so, you know, there's a lot more in the audience compared to, you know, Tacoma.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the attendance wasn't as high as it would be if it was in LA, but I thought a lot of people from Oregon and Washington came, so mm-hmm. I would say there was a decent amount of people there.
Cool.
And for the first time, you know, running a tournament, Daniel did a very good job. I would say it ran smoothly.
That's wonderful. No, it's great to hear. I mean, I've heard nothing but great things about that tourney. Daniel is not a joke. I mean, he's a really busy dude. He's not only putting on Muay Thai shows, he's also running MMA shows, you know, cage fights as well. So he stays pretty busy, not to mention, you know, he's running the gym, Defiant Gym. So there are folks out there like that doing the best. And you know, to your point, you know, not having enough opportunity, when I spoke with Daniel, that's what drives everything that he's doing, a lack of opportunity for his fighters to fight. So he's like, I'm just going to be one of those sources that's creating the opportunity. So he's out there doing it.
Yeah. And, you know, some of our girls, you probably heard of Jackie Bantan.
Sure, yeah.
Jackie fought on one of his shows, so I got to go to one of his Muay Thai shows.
Mm-hmm.
And it was packed.
Yeah.
It was a good show.
Yeah, we got to get you out fighting because, you know, the local fights here, especially in the L.A., you know, county area, the attendance is usually really, really good. The promoters, you know, they're booking 10, 12, 13 fights. All the fighters are bringing, you know, an audience of support. You know, you do the numbers and next thing you know, there's, you know, 300, 400, 500 people in the room. But, you know, I got a chance to see you, you know, train only once out there at Boxing Works. And man, if you fight the way you train, in a room full of people like that, it's going to be unforgettable. I'm surprised I have yet to see you fight here, just like you're saying. I guess you're right. You're just not enough opportunity, huh?
Yeah, we've been having difficulty. The last time I fought locally was for IFS back in May.
No, go ahead. Oh, no.
I fought on Lion Fight in Vegas in October.
Right.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Well, man, you know, just keep trucking because things are moving. Things are definitely moving here in the States. One more thing on the WBC tournament. How was the competition there for you? Do you remember who you fought? How many times, or should I say, how many times did you fight at that tournament this year?
I only got to fight twice. I got a bye on the first round of eliminations. I fought Chelsea, and I fought... Sucks, because it's such a small community of girls that do it. So I had to fight a friend, Kennedy, from USKO.
Kennedy Riley, huh?
Yeah, so we were in the finals together.
That's a weird one.
Yeah, but I mean, friends fight friends. I mean, I fought Natalie twice, and I'm sure you know, once I go pro, we're going to fight again. But I think the best fights are made when you challenge each other. So
that's crazy.
It's a sport. You know, you leave it all in the ring, you know, after the fight, you could have beers, whiskeys, whatever, awesome. Burgers, fries.
That's awesome. Yeah. Lastly, so why are you fighting? Why this? Why do you fight?
Why do I fight?
Yeah, I know that's a big one. That's a, give me 20 minutes. I mean, that's a...
I always like the challenge. I mean, I'm the type of person that always chases all these challenges. And once I achieve something, I'm looking for the next thing to improve on. And Muay Thai is like I feel like it's a never-ending journey. You can get better at something, but then there's something else you can get even better at. So you're constantly working on yourself. And seeing your hard work manifest into something is, you know, something I enjoy seeing.
Yeah.
Being able to see my improvements has also been really rewarding. And, you know, how it translates into your everyday life and into your work life and everything. You know, it's kind of surprise. I guess it's not really much of a surprise. You develop sort of a work ethic that translates into your life, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah, no, I think what you're saying is, you know, you fight because it makes you happy.
Yeah.
You like Janet Todd as a fighter, and she keeps getting better and better in more ways than just in the ring as a result of what you're doing in the ring.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I feel that. I feel that completely. You know, I got into an argument once, not an argument, but my coach, I work with crew Rod McIver from Team Victory. He took me through my first contest earlier this month. And I had a moment where I had a freak out moment because something changed and some characteristics changed. And I didn't like that. And he was like, Charles, you just deal with what's in front of you or you don't. That's it. I don't want to hear all this. Are you fighting or are you not? And he was right. My whole dialogue, it just mattered none. Are you going to fight? Because if you are, then that's what we need to be thinking about. Because if you're not, you can go home. Plain and simple. Yeah. And I'm bringing that into my life more and more. Just forget the excuses and just handle what's going on right now and enjoy it.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping it's one of the reasons why, you know, I really want Muay Thai to grow in this country because you don't have to, you know, go compete at IFMA or take any fights at all. You can just train in a gym in your neighborhood and you'd be surprised at the camaraderie that will develop between you and your training, you know, partners and your coaches and how what you were looking at in the mirror, how you're feeling toward that reflection starts to change.
Yeah, how you perceive yourself. It's funny because I've seen myself put like artificial limits on, you know, certain things that I think I can do. And what's amazing is, you know, through hard work, being able to push past those limits and create new ones. I think that process is pretty damn cool.
Well, then there you go. That also answered my first question with the whole, what do you get from a gold medal at IFMA? There you go. That's exactly what it is right there. Wow. Well, look, I mean, with that being said, thank you so much. Before we wrap it up, is there anything specific coming up next for you? That's A part of the question. The B part of the question is, in a perfect world, what do you want to be next for you?
Well, what's next for me is the World Games. Torrey Jones Jr., who I was part of the IFMA team with back in 2015. We're doing that together along with my coach, Brian. He's going to be the coach for that.
So Brian Popejoy is going to be the coach for Team USA headed to the World Games.
Yes.
Interesting. Yes. Have you ever competed at the World Games before?
This will be the first time Muay Thai is actually included into the World Games. So.
Oh, wow.
Like you said, it's a really exciting time for Muay Thai right now.
Oh, that's big. You just gave me my next topic to start digging around about. Wow, that's incredible. Troy Jones Jr. Well, that guy was born to box. He was born to fight with that name.
Yeah, he's a really standout guy. You should definitely
look him up.
Reach out to him. Yeah, I believe he's in Thailand still fighting and training, getting ready for the World Games.
Okay. So what's next for you is the World Games, and that's in Poland this year, correct?
Yes.
Wow, I got to do some research on the World Games. There you go, folks. I didn't even know that existed until now. I just happened to see a post with you and Troy Jones Jr. You're right, on Facebook. I think USMF actually posted it. All right, so World Games is next. Anything after that?
I'm focusing on that right now. Yeah. So yeah, one thing sense. At a time. I'd rather not try to focus something beyond the future when I got something ahead of me.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. Well, all right. Well, thank you so much, Janet Todd. You've definitely doing yourself and all of us real super proud with the way you're expressing your Muay Thai and the way you're carrying the U.S. American Muay Thai, American Nak Muay banner across borders, and then coming home and winning belts and doing it with a smile and making people happy. It's cool. I've been a longtime fan of your coach, Brian Popejoy, and the more I learn about him, you know, indirectly through all you fighters, just the more I understand why everybody says he's one of the greatest, you know, trainers in the country. And watching you and Brian together, I totally see, you know, the connection. It's a beautiful thing. I love the whole coach-fighter connection, too. That's another big thing. I did a podcast on that. I think it was episode 3 called Put Me In Coach, where I just talked to coaches about just being a coach and being with fighters, because I just think it's just kind of so magical, this whole thing that happens.
Yeah, there's definitely a strong bond there. You kind of have to. Yeah. He has to know you inside and out, because, I mean, I literally trust him with my life.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's literally what's going on, pretty much. Is there a specific social media links that we can share with our friends out here so they can keep up with Janet Todd as she's globetrotting and pushing Muay Thai forward?
Just my Instagram and my Facebook.
Okay. And your Instagram, we will put both her Instagram and Facebook here in the blog post, but it's J, what you tell us what your Instagram handle is?
JM Kokal, so JMCOAKLE.
There you go, folks. Grab that Instagram, follow that. That is Janet Todd, the one and only, and she is keeping it real. And she is a real live American Nak Muay Ying. Thanks a lot for rapping to me, Janet.
Thank you.
I'll let you roll. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks.
Right. Bye-bye. Well, there you have it. We have come to the conclusion yet again to another enjoyable episode of the Teep This podcast. American Muay Thai on American soil and foreign soil. We're finally introducing the sport to kids, potentially bringing the sport to the World Olympic Games, and trying to share the power, self-realization, community, and enjoyment that we all find in this majestic sport called Muay Thai with everyone across our great nation. You can subscribe to the Teep This podcast via iTunes. We're on Stitcher Radio or Google Play. And of course, you're always welcome to stream the audio directly from the website at teepthis.com, where you can also follow the conversation through the images and descriptions and links within that blog post. You can also find links to everyone and everything that we discussed here in the episode description within your respective podcast player. Thank you for listening to the podcast. And remember, live well, love much, laugh often, and train hard. Sawadee kap.